Hello, my name is Hope.
And my name is Isabel, and you're listening to Far Beyond,
the podcast where we delve into enigmatic stories.
For today's episode, Hope is going to be telling me a story, so take it away, Hope.
Okay, today we are going to travel back to 1928 in England. Yeah, so the very, very spooky
Roaring
era.
20s, yeah. Mm-hmm,
the Roaring 20s, and also the end of the spiritualist movement. So
the end?
Yeah, sadly it was the end of that really, really cool Victorian
era.
Oh man,
I hate
era.
When things come to an
I
end.
Know, right? Like all the seances and the ghosts and the creepy things. So, you know, it was the tail end, but cool things were still happening. And we're going to follow the tale of Netta Fenario, who is just this amazing human
What a name,
being.
Like, first
Netta.
Off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
Fenario.
It was actually... Well, oh, yeah, Fenario. I was going to say, like,
Sounds
her real name
so
was Marie,
cool.
But, like, Netta Fenario. Yeah. Anyway.
To just ruin all the
Yeah,
cool
no,
part
Fenario.
Of that.
I want to say it with an English accent, almost. You know, Netta Fenario.
I'm glad you did.
She was born in 1896 in Cairo, Egypt, to an Italian father, English mother. Mother died, sadly, and she was sent to live with her tea-dealing uncle in England.
Those tea dealers, notorious.
I mean, you know, it's right around the turn of the century. It's England, so.
Everyone was having crazy jobs. I remember from Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
That's... historical reference point.
So already, like the beginning of her life, she's just a super cool person. I mean, being born in Egypt and then, you know, moving over to England, she was very introverted, very, very smart, intellectual, and she didn't really find her thing until she got a little bit older in her 20s and she joined the occultist movement.
That was her thing. Just the occult.
It was a thing. Like, in general, you know, that was the era of Aleister Crowley and demon summoning.
Who's Aleister Crowley?
Aleister Crowley was this really cool, I mean, not cool. Not a good person, but he was well known for, you know, conducting different experiments and, you know, starting different cults where people were trying to make contact with the other world.
Sounds like a super cool guy.
Oh, yeah. So he founded the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was pretty cool. You know, there were a lot of, like, well-known people. Yeats was in it. He was this really famous English poet. There were a number of, you know, people who were high in society who were members of these...
occult societies.
Yeah, so although it sounds weird today, it was a respected thing back then.
I just had a thought, and I cannot back this up at all. But if the Illuminati is real, maybe it started as an occult society.
Oh, yeah. I definitely did.
Cool. Okay. Glad
so,
I'm clean here.
So Netta joins this branch of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn called the Alpha et Omega.
Ooh, a sorority.
Yes, yeah, the original sorority, but way cooler because, you know, they were like
they were doing witchy
spirits.
Stuff.
Yeah. Super.
I really
super
wish
cool.
That's what Greek life was still
it
like.
It was founded as that, and then it just kind of like went downhill as soon as they stopped making contact with spirits. So anyways, you know, Netta's doing this. She's really well known in this society. She's meeting interesting people. Diane Fortune was also another member of the Alpha and Omega. And, you know, this was her calling. This was her thing. So around the age of 33, she's been studying this order.
30 and 30.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, she's independent. And she's also an interesting person. So she decides to go to the tiny Hebridean island off the western coast of Scotland called the Isle of Iona, which is a super ancient place where, you know, Druidic Celts came thousands of years ago, and then there were Christian monks who came along who kind of, like, you know, stifled that nature practice out, but that folklore kind of remained. And one of Netta's favorite writers / like playwrights, Fiona MacLeod, also known as William Sharp, but Fiona MacLeod was his pen name, wrote this opera called The Immortal Hour.
Wow.
And in it, a bunch of fairies come and they kind of terrorize humanity and, you know, just general fairy things. Yeah. But Netta was obsessed with it. You know, she went to it 20 times. She wrote an article reviewing it, trying to like decipher the real meaning of the opera, because in it they talk a lot about death being but a dream. So
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, very, very strange stuff. So this author who wrote that grew up on Iona, and in a lot of his writings, he would mention it. He would talk about the stories mm-hmm. of the place, the folklore, the strange experiences that he had on the island growing up. So, you know, Netta really respects this person, and
she's a major fangirl.
Oh, yeah. Like, she's completely, like, yeah.
Going to a show now. 20 times.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's like being a Stephen King fan and then going and staying at the Shining Motel because you're just a giant nerd. So Netta was the nerd of, you know, the 1920s.
The London Occult Society.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there weren't really, like, giant, you know, films to fall in love with or anything like that. So she's following this author who's writing all of these poems yeah. and these, like, gorgeous romantic stories and operas. So she's going there, and it's not just that. I mean, the island's attracted many other artists. There is an ancient history there. So yeah. she travels there in November. Which is not the time to go, if I'm being honest. Like, I haven't been to Iona
specifically.
Listen,
guys, if you're listening and planning a fun trip to Scotland, don't do November.
Unless you enjoy rain and cold. Wind and gray skies.
Which some people do. If that floats your boat,
yeah,
go.
Yeah, if you want, like, an everlasting breeze to, like, puncture through your skin.
Oh, and you know what I just thought about is
soul.
That it's a humid cold, and that's so much worse.
Oh yeah,
it's
and so
bone
Iona,
chilling.
Iona, like, not a ton of trees, very flat. It's only 3.5 miles long, so it's tiny.
Sounds like my nightmare a bit.
Yeah,
I hate wide open spaces.
It's not like going to, like, a nice, you know, forested island where you're just gonna retreat and work on, like, your art yeah. and your contact with fairies.
She's going there for specific reason.
Yeah, there's a reason. You do not vacation on this place. So she's going in November, and it was easy for her to find lodging because most people are leaving. Strange. So, you know, she's just like, she books her Airbnb. It has nice reviews. Breakfast is included.
Breakfast in bed. It's cozy.
Get some nice haggis. Yeah, tea. So
they're super hosts.
Yeah, great readings. And then she shows up in, like, her hand-dyed silks and, like, her dark hair.
Oh my God. Yeah, because she was, like, she was in the it girl sort of London society.
Oh, yeah.
Society,
yeah,
study,
she was
occultist.
She was a very fashionable,
so big shock
person.
For a tiny 3 mile
yeah,
island.
Yeah, you know, it's very rural. It's like coming to a tiny town in the Midwest from Brooklyn in, like, you know, your giant pants and your typewriter by your side and your weird knit hat. And you're just like, I'm here to, like, study the ancient spirits of this land, guys.
Really sorry to all the people in Brooklyn we just offended.
Oh, no, I mean that as a compliment, like 100%. So Netta shows up, and, you know, she's absolutely gorgeous. Like, I think that the way she looks is so cool, but it was definitely made her stand out in that place. Mm-hmm. The family likes her. They notice her actions are a little bit strange. Yeah. She spends a lot of time studying up in her room, reading, writing. She'll take these really, like, multiple hour long walks every evening in her long flowy gowns just to go and, like, visit the ancient druid sites, the fairy mounds, the fairy hills.
I mean, that part sounds kind of fun.
It does sound really cool. Like, from a historic point of view, you know, she knew where, like, ancient murders took place, where there were, like, different things that went on. Yeah. So she was pretty educated.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it's freezing. And she's doing this on a daily basis, and it's humid, like you said. So she's not looking so good. They start to notice that she's getting paler. She has a far-off glaze in her eyes. Mm. She goes into trances where she doesn't talk. And then she keeps reporting that, like, she's hearing voices. All of these, you know, kind of red flags nowadays. But keep in mind, it's the 1920s, and, like, mental health mixed in with, like, the spiritualist movement where, like, if you're doing your job, you're supposed to be hearing invisible voices. So
congrats, honey, you're doing great.
Yeah, so all of these things are kind of, like, culminating. And then on November 17th, she kind of has, like, this weird freak out. She comes back from a walk on the moors, and she's determined to leave. She's seen the ship flying in the sky. It has no I know,
casual.
So she's telling her host family this, and she's saying that she is being assaulted by voices from another world. Different spirits are angry at her, and she needs to leave. So she goes upstairs, frantically packs all of her things up. She's like, okay, I'll reimburse you guys, bye.
Totally normal freak out. Mm-hmm. There's a boat in the sky,
and, like, other things are talking to me. I think there might be fairies, but I'm not sure. here.
I'm getting attacked. Gotta go.
Also, this is all conjecture. I do not mean to be insulting to her experience or anything like that. But anyways, they tell her it's Sunday. This is a tiny island and the fairies don't run. Like, you can't leave. I'm sorry, but fairies you should have planned for this.
The boats.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, it. Different. F-E-R-R-Y. Those fairies. They're not going to come on Sunday. So you're going to have to stay. And she's just like distraught. So she goes out and she waits in the dock anyways with all of her stuff. Like irrationally thinking that something's going to come. And it doesn't. And so she wanders back to the house. But she's completely calm now. She says, okay, like, it's going to be fine. I have rethought my actions.
Popped a Xanax.
Mm-hmm. It was just a minor thing. I've been walking a lot. I'm tired. Sorry, guys. Like, I'm going to unpack now. Gosh. I'll come down for dinner.
I wonder what sort of Airbnb review they gave her.
I don't know. They're probably like, oh, my God, we should have checked her profile before. Like, we let her come. This is, like, really sketchy, but at least we have a down deposit. So she goes up to her room, and she doesn't come down for dinner. And they're like, okay, well, you know, it's Netta. She's tired. That's okay. We need a break. But then the next morning, she doesn't come down for breakfast either. They go up to the room. They look around. And she's gone. But her things, like, aren't packed up. You know, she, like, unpacked everything. Like, okay, like, I'm meaning to stay. Her books are in order and everything. Just like, you know, her regular habits had been. And that's when they kind of get this feeling that, like, something was wrong. And they know that she's foreboding. So, what they do is they get, it's a fairly close-knit community, I'm assuming.
3 miles wide.
It's, yeah.
They're basically all bumping elbows.
Exactly, yeah. And they're like, okay, so, like, everybody knows Netta by now. We need to look for her. She's gone. We're kind of worried about her. And we need to definitely take this seriously. So, everyone is combing the island. The police are alerted. They find absolutely nothing. They're checking all of these places where she's been known to go and sit and contemplate and take notes and write and journal. Mm-hmm. And they cannot find her anywhere. And she's not back at her room in the bed and breakfast. So, you know, that being said, I think it's kind of important to look at Iona specifically.
Well, let's do it.
As an island.
Get out yeah, on just in so, there.
Because, you know, it's not a regular place. It is actually astoundingly regular. Like, it's not geographically beautiful or anything. You look at other islands in Scotland, like the Isle of Skye, and there's, you know, beautiful waterfalls, and there's rolling hills.
And this is just a tiny little.
Yeah, it's, there's nothing little, super.
The Midwest of islands.
Yeah.
Of Scottish islands.
Yeah, so. What makes it even more compelling, though, is that because of that plainness, people have been coming there. It was an ancient druidic site. There are so many Neolithic monuments and evidence of people choosing this, you know, uninhabitable island specifically. I mean, not uninhabitable, but there wasn't anything to really pull them there. Yeah, using it as a place of, you know, weird symbolic importance. So. There's that. So many artists have come, written poems, found inspiration there. So we know that Netta was drawn there, maybe just because she had read so much about its history, but maybe there was something else, something deeper that called her to the island, you know? I mean, you never really know. But there's these things called fairy mounds, which are kind of related to, you know, the ancient nature religions that were, you know, pervasive around the island before, you know, Christianity kind
before
of took hold. Yeah, but, you know, before the monks donned them. So, yeah, so she's, you know, kind of rooting around these things and these fairy mounds. There's also things that are growing there, too. Like, there's...
In nature, hopefully.
Well,
what?
This is kind of a theory that I have. Like, there's this mushroom called the fly agaric, and most people have seen it. It's bright red with these little white spots on it, and it does have some hallucinogenic properties to it.
Nice.
And it's widespread. You know, it grows in North America. It grows all over Europe. It grows in Scotland, all over Brittany, too. And, you know, people have been using it for, like, 10,000 years for different shamanistic practices.
Yeah, so it's got some wacky properties.
It does, yeah, and it's easy to see, too. Like, it's something that definitely pops out amongst all the green. Yeah. It's bright red, and, I mean, I think it's beautiful, personally.
Yeah, I
so,
love them.
Easy to see, easy to find, and then it also has, like, this ancient history, you know? People have always known what it can do. You know, it will make you see things. And if you're going into it, like a lot of, you know, ancient people probably were with the expectation of having a certain experience.
Divine.
Yeah. Whatever it may be. And you're sharing that with your community, I think that those hallucinations can really, you know, take on a deep level of meaning that sort of, you know, they definitely sparked that lore of there being beings associated with, you know, the mounds.
Yeah, all the sort of rituals and taking hallucinogenics goes so far back.
Exactly. So. So, you know, that could definitely be part of her experience there. Mm-hmm. You know, we never really know for sure.
And it was so, like, drugs were less taboo back then. Like, no one even knew what they did, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, cocaine wasn't illegal. Yeah, there were a bunch of different things.
Yeah, they're like prescribing it, putting it in soda.
And with the spiritual.
Here, woman, you're freaking out. Some cocaine.
Calm down a little bit. Here you go, honey. Let's just take a chill pill.
Yeah, they're going crazy.
And with that movement, too, it definitely was helped, you know, by who's like people in the upper levels. It's really secretive what different members of occult groups would do, but it's been known that, you know, leaders would experiment with DMT. They would experiment with different hallucinogens, and that would
makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
It really does make a ton of sense. So I don't know how much of that experimentation might have influenced Netta's perception of the island or other people's perception of the island, or how much that might have, you know, affected her, like, underlying belief of why she needed to be there and why she was almost, like, obsessively compelled to do these things in really uncomfortable, you know, situations and conditions. Yeah. You know, it takes a lot of determination to decide to go
in the middle of November to
you're leaving your friends behind, you're leaving like any possible
you're leaving the sorority.
Yeah, you're leaving Alpha et Omega. What? But, you know, it was for research, so it was cool.
It's rush season. What are you doing?
So, you know, I think it's kind of important to go back. Like, let's go back to November 18th. November 17th was when she went missing. That was a Sunday. She comes back to the Airbnb. She goes to sleep. The B&B. She goes to sleep. She's missing that whole day. They can't find her. What the heck? And then, the next morning, November 18th, you should be very scared, they find Netta on a mound, a fairy mound, next to Loch Stanag, which was an ancient site associated with druidic practices. She was lying on this little hilltop that has, you know, for very, very long been associated as a special magical place, you know, a gateway into another world. She's lying there in nothing but a long black cape.
Like nothing.
Yeah, just this giant black cape, which is kind of like fitting for her style. But normally, you know, she has tons of dresses and stuff. So that, and then she's clasping this black dagger. She has a crucifix around her neck, and then a crucifix has also been carved into the mound underneath her. But the strangest thing is that she has, no wounds or anything. She's perfectly.
Did they find anything on the knife? Like, was there any, like, dirt?
Dirt. They're thinking that the knife was used to carve. Yeah. Okay. Yep. But she has no wounds or anything. She's just lying there, like, frozen, pristine, except for the soles of her feet, like the toe area. Mm-hmm. That's been cut up pretty bad, and that would align with, you know, tiptoeing through the moors, almost, because the heels were completely unscathed, and she's really isolated. She's not next to anything, really, except for some ruins. So, you know, she's lying there, and there's just these marks on her. So I just find it very unlikely, but just difficult to prance. Yeah, to prance through.
Your calves. Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. And then not to mention that she was just wearing this cape. So freezing at the same time.
Humid.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's really interesting. Just super, super compelling. And so they found her. And the death certificate states that she died between 10 p.m. on November 17th and 1:30 p.m. on November 19th, which is a really broad span of time. Yeah. It could have happened any time, like on the 18th, you know.
When did they find her? Does it say?
They must have found her after 1:30 on November 19th. So that's a lot of time to, like, go missing at the same time because they're looking for her that whole day. And keep in mind, the island's pretty small. It's under 3.5 miles long. And there's not a ton of places to hide either. It's not like it's dense woodland or anything like that. So she's just completely missing. So her friend, Deanne Fortune, who was mm-hmm. also a member of the same occult group, she kind of came forward and she was like, Netta was really fascinated by something we call in our order green ray elementals. And green ray elementals were basically fairies. I mean, like, they were one and the same, because they existed on another plane of existence slightly above ours, but they were very related to nature. And that was a big reason Netta was coming to Iona in the first place, was to do research on these. And then another theory was that she also wanted to save a fairy lady who was murdered by Christian monks and, like, put her soul to rest. So there were, like, you know, other underlying reasons that, and then the opera. She was super, super connected to this place specifically. So I think
the monks are sketchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very, very sketchy people. So, yeah, you know, just super, super compelling. I don't know what to think about it. There's been a couple theories put forth
I've got some ideas.
I'm going to give you a few. A few. Okay, so the first one, it's sad but obvious and not very magical, so not my favorite.
Wow.
Yeah, Netta was psychologically disturbed, a little bit messed up.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense, I think.
Yeah, just a wee bit. So, you know, the theory is that she was having some hallucinations, paranoia, that would account for the voices, the strange behavior, and, you know, the different otherworldly experiences that she was so convinced she was having.
Yeah, and also I feel like that just kind of aligns, maybe not though, I don't know, maybe her uncle was a great person. He was a tea dealer, so that could insinuate that, but
what are you trying to say? I feel like
having your mom die as a young child, being shipped from Egypt to England to live with your uncle,
that could definitely have had an interesting
big effect on you. Childhood trauma is a woof, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I didn't see any recorded evidence, but then again, you know, I mean, look at the time period. Also, mental health services.
I'm just speculating, you know me.
Yeah, well, definitely a possibility. And at the same time, even if you did think you had mental issues, I would not want to go to an asylum in that era.
Oh my God, no. Yeah,
no. And then also, the spiritualist movement, like, it was your job to see and hear invisible voices. Yeah, if you're hearing voices,
you're like A+ gold star. Yeah,
they're like, oh good, I am so jealous that you're like paranoid and you're being assaulted by spirits from the other world. That's so cool. Like, and people are like,
let me give you money, you can live in my mansion and tell me what you hear.
Yeah, it was a time when, like, schizophrenia, like, could kind of be engendered by just the lifestyle and the mass fascination with unseen, mysterious things. So that's the first theory. And then other people, I kind of forgot to mention this fact, but Netta would also come back, and she wore a lot of silver jewelry.
Fancy jewelry.
Going in line with her aesthetic. And it would turn black. Like, they would notice that. Yeah, so I think that is super strange and enigmatic. But at the same time, she was on a island where a lot of sulfur, you know, came from the water. So that's one idea. But other people say that the reason her jewelry was turning black was because she had acidosis, which is where your blood pH gets too high. And that will also tarnish silver. And, you know, it leads to erratic behavior, hallucinations. Yeah. I would have had to have been really, really bad to have died from it.
But it could also explain all her craziness.
It could have led her to, you know, wandering out on a cold night in November in nothing but a cloak. You know, it might have, like, caused her to think that was a good idea. So that's a pretty far-fetched one, but, you know, it's just one possibility that's out there. Another one is that a angry or superstitious farmer or somebody could have murdered Netta because they were angry that she was actually disturbing the, you know, the spirits or the powers or whatever they may be in the areas that she was kind of, you know, rooting around in. Because, you know, it is a very rural place. Like, there were a lot of people, and people who still do sometimes, like, kind of believe in some of the lore of that area. They might have looked at her.
And even, like, it could have been the other side. Like, if someone doesn't believe in the lore and they're really religious and she's going around, like, maybe they just don't want people that
yeah, it could have been something
believe
that
in that. They want to like silence her,
targeted,
you know,
targeted against the occultist movement and Satanism and all the things that were like.
Because there was a lot of that. There was people that were doing all these crazy tests on occultists.
Definitely.
And people that were psychics, and
there are a few articles too who say that there was a report of a strange man dressed in a dark cloak being spotted around the same time.
Ooh.
So I'm almost like, I feel like that's too good to be true, almost, because that would kind of that would solve a lot of our problems. Like maybe he was like an occultist member.
But even
from
then,
London,
it's like she didn't have any wounds. Then how was she?
Yeah, well, and you know, so the coroner said that she.
The coroner.
So the we'll just cut that. The autopsy.
The coroner. Okay.
I was trying to do it with an accent. Like
the coroner.
Other places they say coroner. Okay.
Well, yeah,
all right. The coroner's report said that she passed away from exposure to the elements. You know. So, you know, freezing to death. That was the cause of death. They didn't find circulation. They didn't find like poisoning.
And she was naked. So.
Yeah, which would make sense. Like, I mean, it's hard to. I just feel like it would be uncomfortable to fall asleep naked outside on a Scottish island in November, but that's just a personal thing.
I think you're a freak. I think everyone would love that.
So, yeah. So, anyways, this mysterious person.
Yeah.
He could have murdered her. He could have been, you know, a member from the Order of the Golden Dawn who was worried that she was going to divulge some of their secret practices. That was a tiny wooden elephant.
Sorry, I was playing with, like, a wooden rhinoceros. And
oh, it's a rhinoceros. Oh, those are endangered.
It.
Careful.
Sorry, bud.
Oh.
So there's a guy in a cloak, could have been a part of the Golden Red Dawn Phi Alpha Omega.
Yeah, Red
thing.
Dawn, perfect. Yeah.
Trying to get them.
Yeah.
Could have been a farmer, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he just had a cool cloak.
So
maybe
murder.
It was a monk.
We're calling theory three, yes, murder.
Cloak murder.
Cold blood. All of these things.
Okay.
And then one of my favorite theories ties in quantum mechanics. It's the many worlds. It's the many worlds theory. The idea that there's like just endless dimensions stacked on top of each other, different realities that are existing one at a time, like just, you know, kind of pulling forward. It's so hard to like think about, but if that was true, maybe she was making contact with one of those other worlds and she somehow figured out how to break the veil and, you know, describing them through fairies, through lore, through religion is just a very archaic way of kind of conceptualizing this, like,
you have to conceptualize it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe she did break through this reality.
I hope
maybe
it's
she
that
was.
One.
Yeah, me too. Like, I mean,
would you like to
how
hear
do you
my
explain
theory?
The tiny cups? I want to hear your. Okay. I want to hear your theory. Like, we're both going to be serious here and, like, stake our flags in one
of
these.
Okay, here's my theory. I think that she had psychosis. I think she was doing all the opium, doing all the cocaine, doing the shrooms, you know, just indulging
so
in London society.
So you're thinking that drugs
I think already.
Or do you think she was, like, psychotic?
Wait.
Okay.
I think that she was maybe a bit psychotic, just because I think that even the people that were like super deep into the occultist movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like flat earthers.
It takes
like
a personality.
Even though
type,
it was super
yeah.
popular, I think you have a certain personality type and one that's really, what's the word? Easily influenced.
Yeah.
Think that if you're taking drugs, psychosis is something super real. You can get it after doing drugs once, you know? If you don't know the difference between reality and what's not reality, that could totally make sense. She goes to this island, it's a rural. The only interaction she's really having with people is, like, the Airbnb owners, right? She's out wandering the moors. Like, that's gotta just go do wacky things with your head. She's also going about flaunting all her fancy jewelry to all these people. The church is there trying to get rid of paganism in this Scottish rural community. Maybe a monk killed her.
Like a modern day monk or like the spirit of a monk from like 6th century AD?
Like a Robin Hood monk, the monk from Robin Hood, whatever. And he's walking around that got mistaken for a cloak that was in
the
reports.
That would explain
the report. She was just wandering around naked because she was out of her brain.
Mm-hmm.
The monk was like, this is my opportunity, was kind of following her. It's like gonna get rid of this issue.
Yeah, I'm going to make it look like the fairies did it, because they blamed everything on the fairies. It was so unfair.
Yeah, they're like, fairies.
Everything bad. That's the fairies. Don't
then they're
going to
be like, here's
power.
The Bible. So they killed her. They're like, see, this is what happens. Don't believe in this stuff.
Don't be weird.
Don't go near fairy rings. You're going to end up on a fairy mound, dead and naked. And then everyone was like, give me the Bible.
Wow.
Thank you.
That is incredibly convincing. Kind of realistic. But, you know, I'm going to, like, take a leap and go for the mini worlds theory. Like, I'm just...
I mean, that's the one I do want to, like, stick. I believe in that one the most,
like, it's
probably.
It's the one I want to believe that's, in. Yeah, like, deep down in my
childhood.
That'd
be the cooler.
Yeah, I think that, like, Netta and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and Alpha and Omega.
Golden Dawn.
Yeah, it's Golden Dawn. Red Dawn was a movie about, like, war or something. Yeah. I think it took place in Colorado. Anyways...
Guys, one, feel like a PSA before we wrap up this episode.
We are
never
majors.
Yeah, we are not historians. Things should be taken with a grain of salt. Oh,
this is just us finding really interesting.
We've
we
also
say,
never taken
history.
Hallucinogenics, so don't take our word for it if you want to.
We do not condone their use either.
And if you do it, don't think you'll have a spiritual awakening, because that might not happen, and we can't be responsible for
or
that.
Or it might go really bad and you'll find yourself dead on a fairy mound on a tiny island.
Yeah. And that would suck.
Yeah.
Because you're from America, presumably.
So, yeah, you're going to have to make, like, a really big trip to get from point A to point B there.
All right.
But, yeah, I'm going to go for the mini world theory. You're thinking it's, you know, an evil monk. That's where we're at.
Let us know, guys, what you think.
Really
and
do.
I'm Isabel.
I'm Hope. And you've been listening to Far Beyond, the podcast where we delve into enigmatic stories.
We'll see you next time.